first gay president. When Newsweek called Barack Obama that back in 2012, you could say they were looking to stir things up and grab a headline, as well as commenting on an unexpected national trend that the president found himself in the middle of. By the end of his term, Barack Obama will have seen legal rights for gays and transgender people affirmed in a number of state and federal and Supreme Court cases, as well as in statewide ballot measures. In addition, there was the repeal of the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, and most recently, his defense of transgender people in response to the so-called bathroom bill in North Carolina. We asked Heather Kronk for an assessment of Barack Obama's leadership in this major shift in American culture. She was the co-director of Get Equal, a national LGBTQ organizing network. She had three words for it.
Well-intended and reluctant. What we saw over and over again throughout President Obama's tenure was certainly an interest in moving LGBTQ equality forward, but a real reluctance to spend political capital on doing so.
So you think he took no risks? He just followed along a transformation that would have taken place anyway?
I think that's right. I call it equality inflation. He was matching the speed at which the country was moving, which I think he said multiple times on the record that he didn't want to get ahead of the country. That was actually something that we needed him to do, that we still need for him to do, and that we need other politicians to do, especially in the incoming age of Trump.
Is there any value, in your view, in him finally agreeing after his period of reluctance to champion the rights of LGBTQ community members, as he has done since the Supreme Court ruled?
Yeah, I think that it's been important. I mean, it's been important for folks like, you know, my mom and dad who live in Kentucky to hear the President of the United States publicly embracing LGBTQ people, right? That's an important public stand to take. The fact is, though, that he did that, you know, a little bit too late, where he moved his administration to take executive action rather than taking, you know, really spending political capital to take legislative action. And what we're seeing now is a real fear within the community that President-elect Trump is going to come in and dismantle much of what President Obama was able to do, because he did most of that behind the scenes and most of it within an administrative capacity rather than moving legislation, which is much more permanent.
Is there a track record in these kinds of issues of developing that sort of legislative consensus? I mean, I recall the fiasco of Don't Ask, Don't Tell during President Clinton's first term, and he lost a defense secretary and you know, came out big on that and was sent packing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's certainly risk on the part of a president whenever he or she takes big action, takes big, bold action. We saw that with the Affordable Care Act as well. President Obama spent a lot of political capital to get the Affordable Care Act through Congress and did so while the Democrats still had a majority in the Senate, in the House and the Senate. But after spending that political capital, the Tea Party takeover really limited his ability to spend political capital on other things. And rather than taking big, bold action and building up political capital that he could spend, he went underground a little bit. And we didn't see as much big, bold action from him on LGBTQ equality, on gun control, on immigration, on many of the other things that we really needed to see a progressive president embrace.
Do you think that marriage equality is the capstone of the president's human rights record?
I think it's one of them. I think that it's the one that has certainly gotten a lot of attention from folks on the right. And, you know, I think that if the president had done more around immigration and moving forward comprehensive immigration reform, that might have already, you know, kind of matched marriage equality around what he was able to get done. But I do think that it was probably the thing that had so much public support that folks on the right found it really threatening and used that to characterize the president's agenda.
But how are you worried then that it would be rolled back under the next 4 years, given, as you say, there is so much support publicly for recognizing a certain kind of equality here?
marriage equality is the law of the land given a Supreme Court case. And so that is more permanent. Nothing is ever permanent, but that is more permanent than other pieces of what the president has moved through his administration. There are other things that are kind of underneath marriage equality, that are to the side of marriage equality, that have moved over the past 8 years that are, you know, much more fragile. The housing discrimination protections housing equality protections are on the chopping block. Equal access to education is on the chopping block. Even, you know, equal access to credit is on the chopping block. None of these are legislative fixes. And so even, you know, if folks in same-sex relationships are able to marry legally, the quality of that life is on the chopping block. How we're able to move, how we're able to create families, how we're able to, move through our lives will be characterized by what happens over the next 4 years of a Trump administration.
So you worry that without explicit guarantees and safeguards for equality in all of those domains that you've specified, that it will be easy in communities that believe that marriage equality is wrong to discriminate. And whatever the law is, it will be tolerated.
Absolutely. There are still no federal legislative workplace protections for LGBTQ folks. You know, even the most basic things, it's so unbelievable that things like that, simple, common sense things like that are not in place, that, you know, there are some state provisions in place around workplace protections, but there's nothing in the legislative field. There's nothing at the federal level. And so given the Trump administration's stated antipathy for queer and trans folks, and given the aggression that we're seeing from folks who he's putting into his cabinet or seeking to put into his cabinet, I have no conclusion to draw other than the next 4 years are going to be pretty painful.
Donald Trump certainly made a lot of political hay and got a lot of success from telling it like it is and being very straightforward and direct regarding a lot of controversial positions that he took. Do you think that in hindsight, Barack Obama's, you know, lack of that sort of direct and forthright, you know, set of principles regarding anti-discrimination for members of the LGBTQ community meant that he was, number one, cowardly, and number two, missed an opportunity to basically show himself as being a leader?
I do think that President Obama missed an opportunity. I wish that he had been more forthright, because I think that I have a pretty good sense of where his heart falls, where his head falls, but we didn't hear exactly the same thing via his words. Donald Trump established a reputation for telling it like it is, but for telling a very, very small slice of the truth, and the truth, I think, also being generous. Donald Trump got credit for telling it like it is from the perspective of someone who embraces white supremacy, misogyny, and xenophobia. And that's not what I wish for a U.S. president. I wish for a U.S. president to tell the truth, but to tell the truth from a perspective of someone who embraces everyone, who does not malign immigrants, who does not malign Muslims, who does not make fun of folks who are disabled or differently abled. So if I had to choose between a measured President Obama or a reckless President Trump, I'll pick a measured President Obama every day.
But why is it the case in America, and maybe this is a clearer way of asking the question, why is it the case that Democrats presume that they will be punished for taking forthright positions on LGBTQ rights, and there's no such fear of reprisals politically for taking the controversial positions that Donald Trump takes in quite the opposite direction?
Yeah, because the Democratic Party is cowardly, because the Democratic Party as an entity plays not to lose instead of playing to win. And, I'm hopeful that of all of the terrible things that I anticipate coming out of a Trump administration, that one of the positive things that, and I hesitate to couch this as positive, but one of the potentially positive things that could come out of a Trump administration is the Democratic Party growing a spine, growing a backbone, I know the left is going to challenge the Democratic Party to do so. And if they can't do that inside of or underneath a Trump administration, then I don't know what use the Democratic Party is anymore.
Who would lead in that case? Is it Barack Obama, who seems to be the most senior Democrat right now, or is it a Bernie Sanders? Who is it?
We'll see what comes of the DNC chair election that's coming up shortly in February, I believe. I think that a lot of Bernie Sanders' rhetoric was great, but the fact that he could not, for the life of him, move away from an economic message to talk about a racial justice message, I think was a real liability, and will be a real liability in talking about the future of the Democratic Party. So I hope that the voice or the voices that emerge inside the Democratic Party are ones that take seriously that white folks need to talk about race, white folks need to talk about immigration, white folks need to talk about countering misogyny in all of its forms, countering xenophobia in all of its forms. And I'm still looking for that voice inside the Democratic Party.
Those are positions and issues that are very much in play in the American conversation right now. I guess I'm really struck and possibly shocked that Heather Cronk, you don't see leaders in the Democratic Party right now who are going to pick up those issues and run with them.
I see the beginnings of that, but I'm still waiting for the people who are going to play to win and to play to win using that message. You know, what we saw in the 2016 campaign cycle was that the loudest white voices talking about race were white supremacists, were white nationalists, were folks who want to move a xenophobic set of policies forward. And so, you know, we need white folks inside the Democratic Party to aggressively talk about racial justice. And we need folks of color inside the Democratic Party to step into those leadership roles and insist we are going to take up the mantle of the Democratic Party, because so many of the talkers inside the party have really failed to move those messages forward.
Heather Cronk, thank you so much.
Thanks, John.